This is Movies for the Blind, Episode 65, The Snow Creature, Part 1.
I consoled myself with the thought that finding one would more than compensate for my failure as a botanist.
Hi there, and welcome to Movies for the Blind, where you can enjoy films without looking at a screen. I'm Valerie Hunter. Now, just yesterday, I got a comment on the blog, moviesfortheblind.com, from a listener named Rob, who's just getting into the show. Welcome. And wondered if I could feature, quote, some more of those old science fiction movies or those old monster movies, end quote. Well, Rob, it just so happens that's what I was working on. So how about a monster that might actually exist? The Yeti, or Abominable Snowman, has long been a part of the lore of the Himalayan region of Nepal and Tibet. And when Western man started exploring the region, the legend broke out into popular culture. It's been thought to be actually a bear, or an orangutan, or a giant ape thought extinct. But as soon as reports of sightings started coming in from explorers, people in the press and entertainment let their imaginations go wild. A new craze began in the 1950s when Everest explorers Eric Shipton, Edmund Hillary, and Tenzing Norgay found strange footprints in their respective expeditions. In fact, the year this movie was made, the British newspaper The Daily Mail sponsored an intensive search for a Yeti, inspecting paintings at an old temple and taking samples of hairs found in the area. But of course, nothing was concluded. So, as in the case of this film, there aren't a lot of facts to get in the way of a good story. From 1954, this is The Snow Creature. A map shows a portion of southern Asia with a range of mountains separating India and Tibet.
Cradled within the arms of the rivers Ganges and Brahmaputra to the south, and the mysterious plateau of Tibet to the north, majestically stands the mightiest mountain range on the face of the earth, the Himalaya.
The snow-lined mountains are barely obscured by wisps of clouds.
This is the story of an expedition to this rugged barrier. Not to assault on its windswept towering heights, but to find and study plant life, which had heretofore been unknown or inaccessible.
Blowing snow begins to fall.
This is the story of that mission. Of how a small group of people found themselves in pursuit of a crude and primitive civilization, which once only existed as a figment of the imagination.
Lightning streaks down from the darkened skies as snow continues down onto the forbidding landscape. The Snow Creature. An airliner flies past Los Angeles.
Starting from Los Angeles, California, and after careful study of the region, the first leg of the expedition took me to Bombay, India.
Passing over the mountains, the plane drops its landing gear as it approaches Bombay. It descends toward the runway. Touches down.
From there, I proceeded to the town of Shekhar, the last settlement before entering the wilderness of rock and ice.
Two temples tower over the modest village, with the mountains looming in the distance.
There, I selected 10 Sherpa natives to serve as porters. My name is Parrish, Dr. Frank Parrish. By profession, I am a botanist, working for the Corey Foundation. To record the visual log of our expedition, I engaged Peter Wells, well qualified to serve as a photographer. As our guide, I hired Subra, the only English-speaking Sherpa acquainted with the terrain.
Subra notices Peter taking a drink from a flask, then returns to packing. Soon after, he hands out packs to the rest of the men.
Only the most essential equipment was selected and distributed among the members of our party.
Later, the team sets out.
All preparations completed and everything on schedule, At noon on June 14th, we set out to strike at the mountain. Supra's young wife, Tala, and his brother, Leva, accompanied us to the foot of the mountains before saying goodbye.
Supra gives Tala a necklace as the other men walk past them. The husband and wife smile at each other, and Supra puts his gift around her neck. With a few more words, Leva pats his brother's shoulder as Supra walks away. Tala and Leva wave, smiling.
The first days were uneventful, monotonous, and tedious.
Carrying large packs on their backs, the men hike among large rocks. Up an incline, Supra leads a single-file line, with each man connected to the next by a rope.
But as we moved on to higher regions, the terrain became more rugged and difficult.
Behind Subra, Frank carries a rifle.
Wells and I kept up with the Sherpas, who were much like human mules under the weight of our heavy supplies. We continued on to a height of 10,000 feet above sea level, where I wanted to commence my work.
After climbing steep, rocky terrain, the team reaches level ground.
At last on the day, we reach the plateau region.
They stop.
Supra, have your men pitch the tents.
At Subra's order, the Sherpas take off their packs. Soon after, a camp stove is started.
Up to this point, having established only temporary camps, everyone was eager for our first hot meal. Camp 1 was now well established.
Near camp, Frank and Peter take samples.
Except for a variety of common moss and crucifer flower, we found little of interest. But we decided to comb the area more thoroughly for the next few days.
That night in their tent.
How about a shot?
No, thanks.
As Peter drinks and Frank sets up a radio, Supra enters.
Excuse me, Mr. Doctor. Everything all right? Camp orders it up.
Everything's fine, Supra, thank you.
Supra bends down to Peter.
Alcohol good?
Fine.
Yeah, help yourself.
Smiling, Supra drinks from Peter's flask, then hands it back.
Thank you, Mr. Doctor. Wells?
I'm no doctor.
He turns to Frank.
Want anything?
No, thank you, Supra. I'll see you later.
I fix nice hot supper.
Getting up, Subra leaves the tent.
A wonderful tonic. Warms up the gizzards.
Keep that up and you'll pickle your gizzard. Wells, I'd appreciate it if you wouldn't hand out that stuff to any of the men. And don't drink in their presence, understand?
Okay. Suits me.
Frank tries the radio.
Shekhar, come in. Come in, Shekhar. This is Dr. Parrish.
This is Shekhar. Yes, doctor.
Let me speak to Inspector Karma, please.
We'll get Inspector Karma.
That night, all seemed well in the town of Shekhar.
Tala steps out of her house, setting a rifle aside in the doorway, tying a scarf around her head. She walks to a pile of firewood and bends down to it. As she collects some wood, a shadow passes over her. She turns and looks up to a huge fur-covered creature who picks her up and walks off. Leva hurries out. Soon after, he explains to other villagers. Later, a group of men walk into the camp as wind buffets the tents. One of them checks one of the tents and finds some of the Sherpas sleeping. The group moves on to the next tent. The leader sticks his head in and finds Supra sleeping, handing his walking stick to one of the other men. Leva goes into the tent and shakes Supra awake.
Okay.
He sits up. Distressed, he follows his brother out of the tent, reaching back in to get his lantern. He hurries to Frank and Peter's tent and enters with Leva.
Mr. Doctor.
Oh, Subra, what is it?
Yeti, Mr. Doctor. Huh? Yeti.
What's all the noise?
My brother, Leva. He come with four men.
They followed us all the way up here? What do they want?
Brother say, Yeti steal my woman, Tala. We leave. Go after Yeti.
Yeti, what is this?
Yeti, creature of snow. Snow giant.
Oh, you mean the abominable snowman, the phantom of the Himalayas, marauder of women.
We go after Yeti. Find him.
Oh, the newspapers and magazines have carried stories about it from time to time, but...
Yeah, the sheriffs have built this creature into a horror story. This isn't a hunting party. Thousands of dollars have been spent to finance this expedition, and he wants to chase a legend.
Mr. Doctor, Yeti, reason, Mr. Doctor.
No one's ever seen one. Oh, I know people have brought back stories about these semi-humans.
Oh, the whole thing sounds fantastic.
Brother say, Yeti still Tara.
I'm sorry, Subra. Have your brother and his men join us if they want to, but we have other work to do.
Turning to Leva.
I didn't run you.
They leave the tent as Frank and Peter go back to sleep. Next day, food is prepared on the camp stove as the team goes about their usual work. Taking samples from a ridge with Peter, Frank notices Subra conferring with two of his fellow Sherpas nearby.
Because of my decision, I felt that Subra resented and disliked me.
The Sherpas walk off, and the white men watch. That night, as wind again buffets the camp, someone reaches into Frank and Peter's tent and carefully takes Frank's rifle. Oblivious, Frank remains sound asleep. As does Peter. The rifle is returned. Next morning, Subra talks to the other Sherpas. While in Frank and Peter's tent.
What do you think's going on out there?
Well, it sounds like Subra trying to be very important.
I better find out.
Getting up, Frank steps out of the tent. He zips up his jacket and puts his hood over his head, watching Subra send Sherpas off in different directions with their packs.
Subra!
Subra walks toward Frank, who goes back into the tent.
Well, I wonder what they're up to.
What do you mean?
Subra enters.
Subra, I want to talk to you.
Talk?
What's the meaning of this? I gave no order to break camp.
You move.
I'll tell you when to move.
We move now.
Subra, what's come over you? You sent some of our men away, didn't you?
Only four of our men. Other four belong Brother Leva.
Concerned with our men, now come back.
They look this side of the mountain. We look the other side for Yeti.
Frank grabs the rifle.
I'll shoot any man who doesn't obey.
You know can shoot.
When Frank finds the rifle empty, Subra smiles.
Empty? We're taking our cartridges.
Peter finds the same has been done to another rifle.
Subra, this is mutiny.
Subra, take guns.
He does.
All right. Where do you intend to look for this creature?
Everybody look. Rocky Valley Legion.
Why, that's ridiculous. This part is not equipped for that kind of thing.
Subra, no care.
Well, may as well let them go. There's no point in our following along. We might as well turn back.
Turn back?
No can find a way. We move now.
Subra walks out and goes back to the remaining Sherpas in the tent.
Well, I think I need a drink.
Yeah, you'll I need more than that.
Peter sips from his flask.
Wait a minute. What about the radio?
He sets it on his lap.
By Jove, that's an idea.
Subra approaches the tent again. He goes in as Frank hides the radio behind his back.
Get packed. We move right away. Come on. Come on.
Whether Wells and I liked it or not, we had no alternative but to follow along.
Later, Subra leads his section of the team, including Frank and Peter, up a ridge. Single file, laden with packs, they hike a sparse trail, then help each other with rope to a small plateau. The way becomes more treacherous with jagged rock and ice. Soon, they rest, setting down their packs. That night, as wind blows through camp, Frank and Peter approach a tent, finding it's the supply tent. They sneak around to the side. They creep under the side wall.
Take it easy, Wells.
Frank searches among the packs.
Wait a minute.
Did you hear something?
No, it's just the ruddy wind.
Frank carefully sets a bundle aside.
I think this is it. Give me some light.
Peter points a flashlight.
Oh, it's my scotch.
Never mind that now.
Setting aside another bundle, Frank finds the radio box.
There it is.
He opens it.
Let's hope they haven't been monkeying with it.
Ah, looks all right.
He pulls it out.
Wait a minute. It's okay, go ahead.
He picks up the microphone and makes some adjustments to get the power going.
Shekhar, come in.
A rifle barrel pokes into the tent.
Come in, Shekhar. Shekhar, come in. Shekhar, come in.
The radio was shot. Subra ducks his head in.
Subra only want to kill radio machine.
Grinning, he backs out. Then he crawls in under some supplies that are blocking the door, tossing a bundle out of his way.
Where's the scotch? No, wait a minute. That's my personal property.
Take it easy,
Welch. Super like alcohol.
He takes a bottle and puts it under his coat.
Mr. Doctor, better go sleep now. Big walk tomorrow. You too.
Take it easy.
You too.
Come on. Come on.
Frank and Peter leave the way they entered. They return to their own tent.
Well, no radio, no nothing.
I'll get it to work. We'll get to Shekhar police.
Oh, I hope so.
Peter pulls out his flask and opens it.
Wells, have yourself a nightcap. I'll be right back.
Oh, thanks, old boy. I will.
Frank walks out as Peter drinks. Going back to the storage tent, Frank finds Subra has gone. So he sneaks inside and picks up the battered radio. He inspects it.
I found that the radio could be repaired. Wells' case of scotch gave me an idea.
He forces open the case of scotch then pulls the bottles out of it. As Peter finishes his nightcap, Frank puts the bottles in the radio box and the radio in the scotch case. As the night wears on, Frank and Peter sleep in their tent. But Frank wakes up. Then he sits up and shakes Peter.
What was that?
I didn't hear anything.
There is again.
Oh, it's just the wind. The altitude's getting on your nerves.
My nerves are all right. I better take a look.
Frank gets up. Getting the flashlight, he goes outside. The Yeti lurks nearby. Frank looks around with the flashlight. Finding nothing, he ducks back into the tent. Next day, outside, Super tries to open the radio box and is given the scotch case.
We move now.
Frank and Peter approach.
Don't you think you had enough last night?
As he tries to open the case,
Subra! Subra! Yaji! Oi!
Two Sherpas call for his help, and he runs to them.
Come on.
Frank and Peter follow.
Subra!
The Sherpas point out a line of tracks in the snow, footprints 50% bigger than their own.
Mr. Doctor, believe now? The Yeti. Yeti go up there.
The tracks lead higher into the mountains.
We back. Follow steps. Sumaga, tsuite kite yoshio.
They all hurry back to camp. Soon after, they set out, with Subra, Peter, and Frank in the lead. Peter stops.
Subra, aren't you forgetting something?
No one to mention the radio machine. It's dead.
He kicks over the radio box with the scotch inside and leaves it in the snow. Carrying one of the rifles, he leads the others up a snowy incline, single file, large packs on their backs. Later, they hike down through a passage, hoods and hats over their heads and goggles protecting their faces. Subra uses the butt of his rifle to help him climb up over snow-covered rocks. Frank uses a walking stick, as does Peter. The rest manage on their own. As they approach a plateau without snow, Subra peers around, alert for any other sign of tracks. He pauses.
Lost trail. Yeti no stop here. We go up.
He points toward a jumble of boulders and chunks of snow and ice.
Leva.
Then leads the way onward. As ordered, some of the Sherpas go in another direction to search more of the area for tracks. They all climb around the rocks, inspecting the ground carefully. Subra looks back at Frank and Peter, doing the same. Frank and Peter pause to confer. On his own, Subra looks closely around his area. He holds up a small horn. The others turn back toward his call, then start to return to him. A Sherpa with the other rifle joins him with Frank and Peter.
Even Subra could not fight the darkness. At sundown, he ordered the men to make camp.
That night in their tent, Frank tries to fix the radio as Peter looks on.
I still think it was a pretty mean trick, leaving my tonic behind.
The tubes are all right, but the wires are broken.
Oh, now you find out, after depriving me of my...
Wait a minute.
Go ahead.
Still attentive to the noises outside, Peter holds the flashlight for Frank's work. They look at each other, then toward the outside. They hurry out of the tent and find one of the Sherpas lying on the ground. As the Yeti lurks nearby, Subra crouches down with them.
He's dead.
The Yeti backs away into the darkness. Later, in the tent, Peter sleeps, but Frank does not.
I couldn't rest. A legend, the abduction of Subra's wife, the footprints, the death of the native. All these things began to fall into a mysterious pattern.
The next day, the Yeti, covered with dark fur and with the stature of a man more than 8 feet tall, climbs easily over snow-encrusted rocks and looks down on the team setting out to continue the search. It peers around. The men trudge through blowing snow. As Subra leads them past a small cave, the Yeti starts kicking down large chunks of snow, which tumble toward them. Subra spots the chunks and rocks and motions for the team to duck into the cave. From above, the Yeti keeps sending down debris. A team member grabbing some supplies gets hit on the head with a chunk before getting into the cave. The men stay out of harm's way, watching the debris rain past them. Later, clouds pass overhead as the men wait in the cave.
Looks like it's over. We were lucky, huh?
I'll say we were.
Subra orders the men to pick up their packs again. And he leads them out into the open, holding an oxygen mask over his mouth. Single file, they continue upward. They climb over more snow-covered rocks. They cross a ridge with sheer rock and pristine snow below them. And Subra stops.
Come on, EQK.
As the men set down their packs, Frank and Peter approach Subra.
We rest here.
He steps away.
Now this altitude is beginning to get me.
I'm getting pretty high up.
Probably be needing oxygen soon.
Subra looks up at the clouds, which have grown thicker and darker.
Storm come. Need to find a shelter. Clouds dark.
While the men rest and stretch, Subra peers around through binoculars. He spots a much larger cave.
Look over there. Cave.
How long will it take us to get down there?
1 hour, maybe two. You go there, Naika. Hurry, hurry.
As ordered, the team picks up their things and gets ready to go on.
Heck!
Subra starts off toward the cave. Frank and Peter follow, as do the rest of the men. They navigate a passage through the rocks. Skies darken. Subra leads the men on. Standing not far away on a rock, the Yeti watches the men reach the mouth of the cave and head inside. The Yeti starts to climb down. Subra leads the way further into the cave, which is part of a network of caves. They stop. Later, the Sherpas eat around a fire. Frank and Peter sit behind Subra.
Lucky thing for us we found this place.
Yeah, it would have been impossible in the tents with this weather.
Peter smokes a pipe.
Subra.
Yes?
Mirror.
He turns to Frank.
You know, you could be a very famous man.
Oh, yes?
Yeah.
Frank lights a match for his cigarette.
If we did find this Yeti and brought him back to America alive...
Subra only want to kill Yeti.
Suppose you did kill one. How would you know it's the one you're after? If there's one Yeti, there must be a whole civilization or a whole tribe of them.
See, they kill all Yeti. Subra no care.
Well, how far up do you intend to go? To the top of Everest or Annapurna?
Maybe yes.
Where are these creatures? Why has no one ever seen one?
Yeti. Him hide when smell human. But Yeti come low country when want to steal woman. Always want to steal woman. We'll go until we find Yeti. I think we go sleep now.
He gets up and walks away from them. Frank and Peter keep smoking. Later, Frank is lying on his bedroll before the fire when Peter drops his beside him and crouches down.
Move over, MacDuff.
He does, glancing at the sleeping Sherpas.
It's too bad.
What's too bad?
I tried to get to that radio, but it's one of the Sherpas' packs.
Well, we'll just have to wait until we see a better opportunity.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm going to forget it and go to bed.
They spread out and unzip their sleeping bags and settle in. Next day, Subra leads the team through the caves. Stopping, he bends down and picks something up from the ground. The necklace he had given Tala before he left.
What is it, Subra?
This belongs to Tala, my woman. Tala! Tala! Yeti bring Tala here. We go find Tala. Tala!
They go on.
I realized that the snow creature was not just a legend. I consoled myself with the thought that finding one would more than compensate for my failure as a botanist.
When they reach an intersection, they stop.
Subra was a man possessed. He split the party, ordering the men to search the tunnels and to meet at the entrance of the cave.
Subra goes on with Frank, Peter, and a couple other Sherpas. He spots something else on the ground ahead of him, a pile of small bones. They hurry to it and inspect it. Frank and Peter step aside.
Now, this place gives me the creeps.
It's not the most cheerful place in the world. It's only an animal of some kind. Subra!
He goes to them.
What is it?
Mountain goat. Let's go.
He leads them on. They head down another tunnel lined with black rock. Then Subra decides their next direction in another intersection. They continue the search. In a darker passageway, they begin to slow down as they try to make out what's at the end of it. The Yeti, facing two smaller figures.
Yeti!
Subra raises his rifle, but Frank gets a hold of it as Peter hurries forward with his camera. The Yeti turns to him, and the flash goes off.
Tara! Tara!
As the smaller figures cower behind it, the Yeti lumbers to a wall and starts to tear rock and dirt from it, starting a cave-in. The men back away as the cave-in comes down on the Yeti and the figures.
Yeti!
Subra and the others run forward to the Yeti, who is knocked to the ground. Frank picks up its huge furry arm and inspects it.
He's only stunned. He's not dead.
He stops Subra from shooting it and takes the rifle, which he gives to Peter.
I'll give him a hypo to keep him quiet. Get a tarpaulin. We'll carry him in that. Go on.
Later, Subra helps carry the Yeti and the tarpaulin.
We found that the female and child of the snow creature had been killed by the cave-in. We held Subra and Leva at gunpoint and ordered them to carry the creature back to the entrance of the cave to meet the rest of the Sherpas.
They reached the entrance.
Subra, tell your men to put up their hands.
One of them drops the other rifle.
Wells, get that gun.
He does.
One false move and I'll shoot. Tell that man to put the radio down.
Radio all stay.
I'll try to get the Shekar police.
Frank goes to the Sherpa with the radio in the scotch case and takes it. Then they start heading back.
Unable to establish contact with Shekar, we started down, determined to bring the creature back alive.
Sherpas carry it in the tarpaulin as they cross a ridge and climb down through a passage. That night, the Sherpas sleep together side by side in a tent. Resting beside their heads is the tarp which holds the Yeti. On the other side of it, Subra sleeps. And at his feet, Peter sits holding a rifle with Frank dozing beside him.
Wells and I took turns watching to make certain that nothing went wrong.
Later, Frank sits up, trying to stay awake. The tarp begins to move under the ropes that bind it. A paw reaches out from under it toward the head of one of the Sherpas and grabs it. Frank springs up and hits the Yeti with the butt of the rifle until he subdues it. Okay, so the Yeti is not going down without a little bit of a fight. Can Frank get him back to the village, let alone to the United States? And if he does, hey, what could possibly go wrong? Find out next time on Movies for the Blind. By the way, you might have noticed that the language that Subra and his fellow Tibetan Nepalese Sherpas are speaking is Japanese. No one said this is a documentary, gang. Easier, of course, to find Japanese actors in Hollywood than Tibetans or Nepalese, and hey, while we're at it, just let them speak their own language. So the closest they get to speaking the correct language is probably in using the word Yeti. For more information and links about the movies, about description, and how to subscribe, check the blog, moviesfortheblind.com, where you can also find out about this podcast's Creative Commons license. The movies are from the Internet Archive, which is also the host for this podcast, so please support universal access to human knowledge by visiting and donating at www.archive.org. Thank you for downloading and for listening. Be back next week. Take care.